Okay, all flight controllers, go, no go for landing. Retro.
Go,
no,
I don't
go.
Titan,
go.
GNC,
go.
Econ,
go.
Control,
go. Ninth Planet Audio.
Capcom, we're go for landing.
Welcome to another episode of Turek Books. We have with us today a guest I'm very excited to introduce to you. He's an activist, a comedian. You've probably seen him doing the good fight in front of many city councils around the country. Has his own show on Netflix, Chad and JT Go Deep. JT Parr.
Oh, what's up, dude? Stoked to be here. Thank you for having me.
I feel like when I watch you, you're probably a very well-read person in disguise.
You know, sometimes people will say that. I think that's the best way for me to appear. Like, because if I try to be smart, people get annoyed quickly. But if I try to be dumb and I'm accidentally smart, people find that charming.
Yeah, I got lost in that even as you were saying it. I was like, damn, he did it to me. I
well, the
fooled
depth
by
of my
another one.
Obsession, yeah.
No, I think you're spot on. And it's like that spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, you and I have known each other for a really long time, casually, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever hung out one-on-one, but I've run into you so much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I remember the conversations we had.
Me too. I remember you and I were hanging out at that Carney's hot dog place on Sunset. Mm-hmm. It looks kind of like a train car, and the food was really cheap. Is it still there?
Yeah, and the food's really good,
it's
too.
It's good.
And the hours are nice if you're up late.
Yeah. Yeah, so I remember that. I brought this. So every Christmas I get my girlfriend like a few coffee table books at Skylight Books, one or two, usually things more in line with her. But I took a risk a couple Christmases ago and got her this book that I feel like was really more for me, but I think you'd appreciate it. It's called American Bachelor.
Oh, that's sick.
And it's like a document of bachelor life in like the early 2000s. This is before the sort of social media, like hyper self-awareness or fear of being canceled or whatever came out. And so it's just like this real fascinating time capsule of like kind of sincere bros. I don't know, flip it open.
And they're not playing into it.
They're not playing into it. This is who you would almost make jokes about now. But
yeah, see, that's awesome. Oh, this is making me so nostalgic.
So nostalgic, right? Yeah, because this is when I got out of high school, and there was nothing ironic about this lifestyle. This is just who men were at the time, which was like this whole toxic brew of sort of masculinity moving into like, I guess self-awareness,
adulthood,
but not quite there yet.
I think there was also something nice about before social media, like you didn't know how unattractive you were because you didn't see every good looking person in the world. So you could kind of pretend that you were like pretty hot, you
like
know,
whatever your mom told you about yourself last.
Yeah,
exactly. What you could run with.
Yeah, dude, to that, like I moved in with my mom for a little bit during COVID. My self-esteem's never been higher. Like every day my mom was like, God, you are just a smoke show, man. And I was like, let's go, dude.
Just gassing you up.
For sure.
Oh my God. That's well, you know, it's good. I'd rather have like the delusionally optimistic mom about
totally
than the other way around.
Yeah, because I think you fake it till you make it a little bit too. Like if you believe it deep enough, the rest of the world, but see, social media won't allow that. But like if it was just interpersonal, you can convince those people a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. This you talking about that era also reminds me, like when you're at that point when someone took a picture of you, you like would be so thrilled if you ever saw the photo.
Yeah.
Like if they came back into your life with the printed out photo and you're like, oh my God, that's me.
There was this kid, Julian Darabeo. He had a website like Got Jewels before there was like, you know, MySpace or anything. And he would put up pictures from parties on there. And when I finally made it into one, I felt like I'd made it.
Oh man.
Yeah. This book is awesome.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. I mean, all these people are just living.
Yeah. They're just living. They're
but they
preoccupied.
Probably felt like the life was shitty then. And they probably thought before was better.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, very much like that
Midnight in Paris
Midnight
kind of
Paris vibe. Yeah, where everyone's kind of lusting after the eras before them.
Yeah, because we might have it made right now.
I know. Don't. Isn't that scary? But we probably
this
do.
This might be as good as it gets.
As it gets. Like, if you have a can of tuna in 20 years, You're just like, you know, this, you used to be able to just get these for like 99 cents.
Well, and that's how it goes, right? Like peasant food becomes like the kind of elite food.
Yes.
Over a generation.
Yes. I worked with a chef, a great chef, and he said like all great cuisine comes from scarcity and the creativity that is required to adapt to that scarcity and like, you know, yeah, keep things good even when they aren't.
Yeah. Like oxtail. Like that's like a, that's like every bougie restaurant, or like if you watch Top Chef or something, someone's always spinning that in there. But like that's can't be, that's not the best part.
No,
of
that's
it.
The end. That's yeah. the end of the animal.
That's the shitty part.
You get to the cul-de-sac of that ox, and
what's the best part of the ox?
I think, I think the front flank. Right?
Yeah, I'm a big flank steak guy. Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, I love it.
Okay.
It's good stuff.
And an ox is different from a cow, right?
I have no idea.
Yeah, me neither. To me, an ox is a cow that's pulling something.
Yeah, I think it's more labor intensive. It's more muscular.
Okay.
Cows just kind of sit. They graze.
They graze.
Ox are, you know, always moving forward.
But, so it's the like that quantum physics animal. Things where like you don't know if it's a wave or a particle until you open the box.
That's so funny. I just interviewed a quantum physicist. I didn't understand a word of it.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the extent of my knowledge.
Between
right there.
Zero and one, there are waves. I was like, well, you're talking about two totally different things.
Yeah. Zero and one.
They can't even explain it.
They can't.
They're like, well, it's English's fault.
They're right. They're using numbers and words as like metaphors for something that they're talking about.
But it don't fit right.
No.
I got to the end of it. I was just burnt out.
Oh,
and I, you know, I don't even think quantum computing, I don't even think it's not going to happen.
Do you think he was burned out too?
He was like sad. Well, I think they're using it for like encryption. I'm like, who gives a fuck about encryption?
What's in, oh, to hide what
yeah,
you're
like
doing?
Like for password stuff.
This is where quantum physics is dovetailing. Like they're like, yeah. Okay, well, we got to cordon you off to some kind of industry. So after we get the particles, you know, whatever, after we could finally split the atom or whatever.
Yeah. When they do your calculus, let's make sure no one can see your dick pics. 40 things. Yeah.
Right. Jeez Louise. Yeah, I tried to in my early 20s read a few books on that, and it's just like, yeah, you can conceptualize whatever they give you a picture of, but you're not getting deeper into it than
no
that.
It's not going in.
No, it's not going in. Well, what has gone in with you? I see you've got a nice stack of books here. I'm excited to get into them. I'm excited to see where you're at in your reading life, what you want to talk about, what you wanted to get off your shelf.
So I guess I went chronologically, and some of them aren't with me, but like the first book that really impacted me was this book, and I can't find it anywhere. I couldn't even find it on Amazon when I was Googling it. I found it in my school's library when I was in eighth grade. It's called Crooked. It's about a girl with a crooked nose who's in junior high. And her and this boy have a crush on each other. And he just lost his dad, who was a milkman. And the cover had a milk, you know, like the milk jars that used to get delivered. And then it's like very dark colors. And I read it. And it was so sensitive to how kids think. And I think it was written by a husband and wife. And it was really smart about how like we're mean to each other to kind of become more popular mm-hmm. when you're that age, and how you kind of like things that are bad for you. And it was the first time I'd seen any of that, and it really like moved me.
Yeah. No, I mean, to get those voices down when you're not even a kid anymore, that's like a real special thing.
It's crazy. They're probably in their 30s, 40s, and they were like drilling how my brain worked.
And it was a husband and wife.
I think so.
Maybe almost like because as a couple, you like awaken all these early issues in
that's
yourself.
That's so true.
You're just like, okay, you know how I got mad at you for that thing that I shouldn't have gotten mad at you for?
Yeah.
I think it's because when I was in high school, you know, someone called me Joshy, and I didn't really want to be looked at as a Joshy at
Dude,
the time.
So true.
I
that
didn't
shit
have
happens
any
to me and my girlfriend
hair,
all the time.
But, you know, it was like, yeah, just like yeah. that.
Like, you think you're done with the past. The past ain't done with you. Yeah, I'll get insecure about some wild shit, and I'll just pick a fight. And she's like, what is going on here? And I'm like, years and years of me fighting against that narrative, and you just confirmed it. And just ruined my life, and you're the person I'm hitched to. This is crazy.
Oh. Yeah, I'm fighting ghosts, and you just happen to be the one I can see at the moment.
Yeah, and I didn't know you were on their side. Like, so you agree with my seventh grade bully. You're that kind of person.
I ended up becoming friends with, like, a guy who used to bully me on the bus, and he like, swears he didn't.
Every time.
Right?
I was a bad bully, but I've reached out to everyone. And
have you really?
Yeah, I tried. Except for one person, because I don't think they want to hear from me. But everybody else, I've been like, yeah, hey, sorry about that. Most people are very gracious about it, too.
But, I mean, you're about my age. You're, like, in your 30s.
Yeah, 36.
Whatever. Yeah, I'm older than you, 38. But, like, this American Bachelor book kind of brings you back. It's like that behavior was rewarded. It was a little more dog-eat-dog. In that era, it was still coming out of this, like, I mean, when your teachers are, like, Vietnam vets and their parents are World War II vets and, like, you know, Operation Desert Storm's raging and whatever, it's like...
Kosovo.
Just don't, keep listening. Don't discount... Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and all the rest of
all that.
All that
business in Nicaragua.
Oh, if you want to talk CIA intervention, we can go there too, because I was feeling it, even if I wasn't aware of it.
Well, the teachers had it in their bones somewhere.
Yeah. And so you put that mix together, yeah, and it did feel different than it does now, which is, it's a good thing that the world's growing up, I think.
Yeah. I didn't become nice till I was like 24. I kind of evolved a little bit, and then I was like, oh, I think my life will work out better for me if I'm kind.
Yeah,
and for the most part, it did. But actually, now recently, I found myself trying to bring back some of that like junior high vengefulness and like combativeness that I had. Like, I think I kind of need some.
Kind of need some, right?
Yeah, I think I might have gone too far. I mean, it's a weird thing to like be grading. But what was your bully like now? You guys are tight.
Yeah, I was like a groomsman at his wedding.
Whoa.
I mean, it wasn't anything severe. I just remember he was like making fun of me on the bus, like several times. And so then, yeah, one Halloween night, we were like friends for years as adults. And one Halloween night, we were like on Molly, and I finally was like, hey, Steven, just so you know, like you were like my bully. And he was like, I was not your bully. And then we just argued about it. And then you look out the window and it's broad daylight and you're like, what are we doing? I got to go home.
That's the best night.
I got to go home.
That sounds.
And pee on my bathroom floor and go to bed.
Yeah, hell yeah, you do.
No, it wasn't like super hardcore. But yeah, no, I feel like there's a couple kids who probably like in middle school thought I was a bit of a bully. I, you know, looking back, it was just all that textbook stuff of not being able to take out your anger at home and being insecure and feeling left out.
I think it's the root of all like evil, basically, is feeling left out.
Feeling left out, yeah.
Being away from the group. And some people feel it even when they're not,
right,
just because they're so sensitive. But I really do think that's the core of it.
Yeah, well, and you were saying then at 24, you realized things would turn out better for you if you were nice. It's also just like what behavior gets incentivized. And then, yeah, you go through, you're like, I think being nice is actually just going to, like, make things easier for me, like, in a very selfish way.
Yeah.
And then you get further into, like, your life and the business world, and certain relationships have time to get further down the road. And you're like, okay, actually, so there are limits to this thing in the way society's shaped right now, especially in, like, the business world.
Totally.
Like, you have your values, and then you have the drives of the capitalist engine. And those two things, they want you to be able to do both, but yeah, there's a lot of gray area with them.
Yeah, and I've tried to argue like, hey, we should all be being nicer to each other, but that's like, it doesn't always like move people, you know? So sometimes you got to be able to just be like, listen, you piece of shit motherfucker. I think, you know what it really is? It's not being one or the other. It's having access to both, I think, is the important thing.
Yeah.
It's being able to like draw on the angry part of yourself in a functional way, and also be able to draw on the kind part of yourself when compassion's needed. It's like it is some Star Wars shit.
Yeah, it really is to like recognize that moment when one should be called upon or the other, when you're going to use the force.
But they have momentum. If you start being angry, then your brain goes there quicker, and then it's like, go angry. And then afterwards, you're like, oh, I shouldn't have yelled at my dad that time. Like, I was right to yell at him 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But this time, this literally just happened.
You used the yell card. You pulled out your yell card, and it just wasn't.
No, I was like, that wasn't a yell card moment.
Yeah. Yeah, but it happens.
Ocean Avenue.
I've started surfing a bunch this year again, hadn't in a while, and I hit my head in the water a couple days in a row, and immediate headache, but I was like, I'll just go again, and I'll try not to hit my head, and I did, and I definitely felt foggy, and then, yeah, I ended up, like, getting in a fight with this personal trainer at the park near my house, because his dog was, like, a little too aggressive near my little dog, and, you know, I just walked away just kind of, like, so embarrassed by having lost my cool. also, like, I'm, like, holding a poodle under my arm, yelling at a personal trainer. I was like, I gotta move from Santa Monica. This is, I'm turning, if someone caught this
Can
on
I say
video
so? I love
right
that
now.
For you.
Really?
Yeah. I think you're living. You're alive. Okay. And you're living without shame.
Yeah. There was a little shame.
Though. Afterwards?
After.
That's normal.
Okay. And then I'm sitting down at this coffee shop near it, and this woman walks by who I guess had heard it, and she just goes, we love our dogs.
See, I think that's another thing. I think conflict leads to a lot of connection.
Right?
Because people see you as yourself, unprotected, and they feel close to you as a result.
Yeah, there it is.
Like, when I was yelling at my dad, we went outside my girlfriend's place, and I was in his face, and we were yelling, and then my neighbor was there. And afterwards, I had to go talk to him, and it really kind of bonded us. He's like, no, I get it. And I was like, in that moment, I was like, oh, he's had fights with his dad or wanted to have fights with his dad, and it kind of...
Whoa, yeah.
Yeah, we're like, we're more eye to eye now.
Yeah, sort of healthy conflict. Because you and your dad didn't, like, throw blows.
No, my dad says I was going to, but I wasn't.
No.
No, he's just trying to pin me down as some kind of monster.
Yeah.
But he knows for a fact.
Yeah.
He knows for a fact.
I would not punch you, Dad.
I would not. I have in the past, but it's okay. We're past that point.
Yeah. No, that's, it's just growing up.
So the guy, the personal trainer, were you right?
I feel I was right. And you know how I think I'm right is because even to this day, I won't walk past that park now because I'm like, I'm mad about how he was a personal trainer who didn't take accountability, which is like the worst thing you could have in a personal trainer.
You gotta have accountability.
His dog, I do not blame at all. It was a friendly dog, just much bigger than mine. This guy is always at this park. He lets his dog off the leash. It's a small park, so you basically can't use the park. And so his dog pounces on mine, and I'm like, hey, can you just get your dog under control? Your dog just hurt my dog. He goes, how do you know it hurt your dog? Did he tell you?
Okay.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I'm this big swinging dick. Dude, I was getting mad as you were talking about it.
Okay. And my dog is 13 pounds, like couldn't harm a fly. My brother and his new girlfriend are there too. That's the other part. So I'm with my brother. And yeah, just kind of, I called him a yuppie. I called him all these names.
You got to hit him where it hurts. And you got to give him something to think about.
Something to think about. Yeah. And I definitely like engaged his clients. You know,
yeah, good.
Like, oh, why don't you guys park some more cars here? You know?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, not my proudest moment, but I have had things like this in my past where it's like, yeah, I feel like I get to a point where I'm backed into a corner enough that I do kind of explode, and I have this booming voice when I do.
Yeah, and you're a big dude.
Big dude.
Yeah.
It's all a bluff, but...
We're all blowfish.
Yeah.
But I think it's important that this guy's coming to the park, and here's my thing. If you're going to act like a big swinging dick, whether you're aware of it or not, like, you're taking up all this space, you're bringing all these people, you're definitely making us all, like, kind of orient around your behavior, well, then you got to be ready for people to come at you, and you can't really play victim in that moment because you've decided to take up all this space.
That's right. And then he kind of, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah,
and that's
what
I didn't
like about it.
Be
that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know. I feel that way in this world too, where I'm like, I respect people who, okay, I don't agree with them. I don't think the world's going to be in a better place necessarily because of them. But like, I respect people who kind of own their evil more than I do the people who are pretending to be good and still committing evil.
Yeah.
It's just one less step.
Yeah,
of evil in the process.
It's crazy how far self-awareness goes.
Right?
Where you could be like the worst person in the world, but if you're like, yeah, I'm kind of a piece of shit, I'm like, yeah, but you're a real dude.
Yeah, but you're my piece
of shit.
I'm like,
but you're a real
you know?
Dude. Yeah, no one could take that.
Yeah, I mean, I could get into all this sort of disenchantment with politics at this point, but I'd rather hear about the books you brought.
Maybe we'll get there.
Yeah, it's maybe we will.
Oh, you know what? Let's skip then, because boom.
JFK.
Politician.
Yes.
But Canada. It's his early years. This is like, this ends right when he was like elected. It's so funny. Governor or senator. I think it was senator. But it's his early life. And so I kind of went books that have affected me at different time periods. And now I'm firmly in like my old white guy phase where I don't really read novels anymore. I just read biographies of great men.
Yeah.
And I believe in great men. And this one, I think of all those, is my favorite.
JFK.
He's just so inspiring. He's just, if you have like your creative player attributes, he's like 100 on like 10 of them.
Really?
And and just he's like a 0 as a faithful husband. But everything else, he's like 100.
Right.
He's so smart. He's so brave. He's so inspiring. He's so tenacious. I just, I was totally moved by it. I bought in hook, line, and sinker.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, you know what you know about JFK, but unless you delve into it, I really don't know that much. I know he came from a prominent family, but he was very much for your average person, and the CIA killed him.
Exactly. So I haven't gone to the CIA killing him.
Right, because this ends before he even becomes president.
Yeah, and I grew up spoiled, so not to his level, but the great part about war was it was this great equalizer where he got to prove himself independent of all that. And, you know, he kind of saved his crew. Their little U-boat went down, and he, like, dragged one guy with his teeth, like, pulled the guy's life vest by his teeth, and they swam, like, a mile to some island. And then he went for a swim into, like, you know, the unforgiving ocean to try and find help, and ended up getting his crew saved.
No way.
And then he wrote a book that won, like, the Nobel Peace Prize about politicians who go against their own party. I mean, he had a bunch of nurses writing it for him.
Right.
It was when his back was all... He had
this
back
is post-World
problems.
War II?
Yeah. And he went against his dad. His dad was, like, for Germany, and then JFK was like, no, Germany's a problem. And, yeah, he was just kind of a... Just a cool dude, and then, like, chicks really liked him, which I think is also very compelling.
Yeah, I mean, to be desired in our society, there's, like, a big value on that. So he, like, I was thinking he tugs the guy in by his teeth, and then he swims back out to, like, maybe try to meet some local women, and then he'd come
They were
back.
All taken with right. him, so they came over on their canoes, they grabbed him, and like, they saved the
We were ready
teeth.
To spy for America.
Yeah, and it just had some good, it's beautifully written, it had some good quotes in there, like, he used the attributes of the weak, which is cunning and audacity. And that really stuck with me.
He views the attributes of the weak?
No, he used... So, because his body was kind of compromised, it said he used the tools of the weak, which is cunning and audacity. And
whoa.
I was like, oh, yeah. Whoa. That is... Yeah, if you got those, you got a shot.
The audacity is just like having a huge view of what you can do in the world?
Yeah, and just going for it.
Yeah, and people being magnetized by that?
Exactly. And that was the other thing. People were just so magnetized by him. For whatever it was, maybe it's just like lore, but something was in him that captivated people.
It did, huh?
And his homies talk about it. Like, they're just like, yeah, he like moved outside of time. It was like, the way they talk about it, it was like, Jesus Christ.
Can you imagine if you had a friend like that, that you just like revered? Maybe do you? Do you have a JFK in your life?
You know, I don't know if I'm a good enough person where I could handle being around that all
right.
the time.
Right.
It might make me feel too bad, and it might make me be like, I'd rather try and be my own
JFK.
Yeah, and even if I fail,
yeah,
I find more fulfillment in that.
So you like true ego identification with JFK. You're like, I see some of these traits, and I can grow
these
within myself.
Yeah, it's totally aspirational. You know, I do kind of feel that way actually about Chad.
You do?
Mm-hmm, where he moves me in ways all the time just through his work ethic and his, he's very kind. I've never seen him be like mean to someone. And I've known him for like a decade, so
wow.
I'm always blown away by that, just how like gentle he is with people.
Yeah.
And kind of above the pettiness that a lot of people are in. But then he still works really hard. It's an interesting combo.
I mean, especially in the comedy world. A lot of people are drawn to it out of a certain inferiority, and so there's a lot of jealousy and whatever.
Totally.
And this need to be heard, and you feel like if someone else is heard, you're not heard. I mean, I'm guilty of it.
And no, totally.
Yeah,
I am
so
too.
To hear someone in that world who isn't is pretty cool.
And he's still really ambitious while simultaneously not being like, no, less for you. It's cool.
That
so yeah,
cool.
He's probably the closest. But yeah, this book rips shit.
Yeah, it's
awesome.
It sounds awesome. I mean, just, yeah, I'm just racking my brain for like, who are those compelling figures now? And we just don't have them at the moment. And like when Obama happened in that first moment when he kind of took the stage and he was such a great speaker and so inspiring, and he had all the right slogans behind him. I mean, I think we had a moment where we really believed in, like, okay, maybe things are turning here.
It caught me at the wrong time where I was very cynical about it.
Oh, really?
I was like, oh, it's all celebrity. But then looking back on it, I'm like, oh, I should have enjoyed it more. It was
enjoyed
kind of a nice moment.
Because ultimately now he's a Netflix producer. So
dude,
you were
me
right.
So hard. Did you read his book?
I read The Audacity of Hope, like, but not the new one. Like, this is like in, what, 08?
Yeah.
When he was running, I read that book.
I read the new one. It's too long.
Is it?
That's my big review.
There we go. Like, needed more action.
He talks too much.
I mean, the fact that JFK has like action in his biography.
Yeah, shit's happening.
Like, it is an action film.
And they're moving around a lot. Like, his family's in Europe. His sister's dating like a prince. It's
glorious.
Yeah, it's glorious.
Okay.
And then This book is the one that hit me the hardest in high school. It was, again, I picked it up in the library when I was in detention. And he's one of my all-time heroes. It's Roger Ebert, The Great Movies. And it's just his reviews of, like, the best movies ever.
Roger Ebert was such a compelling writer.
The best. A lot of empathy.
Yeah, a lot of empathy. He wrote this piece shortly before he passed away that I, like, saved because it was just so touching and so aware of life and what we're doing while we're living. Just kind of amazing, like a film critic had the talent himself.
Yeah, it's called Death Itself, right, or something like that.
Oh, so yeah, so they made is that?
Oh, that's
the
documentary. Yeah. But I know the essay you're talking about. Where he's talking about, I'm not afraid to die. I wasn't afraid to be born.
Something about a train to somewhere. He's taking a train to ruin or some French place he probably spent some time in that I haven't and can't pronounce.
No, that really moved me. That was when I was like, oh, this guy is just like someone who inspired me to get into like movies and art. To like, I was like, oh no, he's like teaching me how to live a little bit.
Right. And so in that book, The Great Movies, did it uncover some that you went and watched, or did it kind of expand your thoughts about ones you'd already seen?
Yeah, I think it totally gave me stuff to go watch. Like I saw like Do the Right Thing because of this, Body Heat, Taxi Driver. I learned a lot about older films, and then learned a lot about, it's like that thing when you first start reading, it connects you to other things that you then read.
Yes.
And this was like one of the big touchstone ones that way, where like, I didn't know what like why Battleship Potemkin was important. I didn't know why Citizen Kane was important. And even if I never like grew to like love those things, he just gave me context.
Exactly.
And so the Bella de Jour,
I've seen it.
Yeah, about a French woman who becomes a prostitute.
Yeah.
Especially the sexual stuff was very exciting to me.
That's cool.
Because I lived in kind of a conservative place, but I could tell everybody was horny. And he was just drilling all these movies where it's like, yeah, everybody is horny. And it's art. It's art to be horny. And I was like, nice, good. JFK, Hoop Dreams. And yeah, he just is a beautiful writer. And then it gave me a good, like, I don't know. It gave me a good rubric of stuff to go check out.
That's cool. Some people theorize that like conservative culture is like a fetish to like make the horniness more fun.
I 100%
like,
agree.
Isn't that the thing? Victorian culture, they were dressing up that way, intent in abiding by all these rules to create kink everywhere they looked. I don't know if that's
historically
accurate, but it resonates.
Like,
right?
I think some people want it to be, they want sex to be a bad thing that makes them like nut harder.
Right.
So like, rather than being like, hey, we're poly and it's all okay and it's all worked out and ethical, they're like, no, the point is that it's unethical, is that we act like superheroes in our day-to-day and then we fly to Mexico and do just unspeakable things.
Yeah, because if you've ever been to like a hot springs where everyone's naked and or like some alternative event like that where no one's wearing clothes, it's like the least sexual
it's
thing.
Boring.
It's like very pure and heart-centric, but yeah, it's not necessarily like erotic, really. It's erotic on a frequency that's way too low for everything we've been exposed to, I guess.
Yeah, it's almost childlike when you're in
it's
that
childlike.
Kind of, you're just a kind of free.
Yeah,
but you're not like looking to get down.
No,
but and I think there's also something where like, I think we're attracted to people who can compartmentalize it very well, almost like that lady in the streets freaking the sheets like aphorism. Like, if you really dig into it, what we like about that is that someone can be so one way, but like they're so good at hiding this
right.
other powerful part of themselves.
A transformation occurs.
Yeah, maybe that has like a societal power where they're like, oh, you know, this person's like, they can move me forward a little
they're
bit.
They're a good liar. Lying about things
lying
is very
is not.
Valuable.
Like that Panic at the Disco song title. Or it's a quote from that movie Closer, a play Closer.
Do you remember the quote?
Yeah, it's like, it's so, yeah, I love it. I'm not even going to say it's something that's like, I'm not going to say it's corny because it's not corny. It's good. It's lying's the most fun a girl can have without taking her clothes off.
And does Natalie Portman say that or Julia Roberts?
I think Natalie Portman says it when she's flirting with Clive Owen after they both get cheated on.
Nice.
Yeah.
Lying is the most fun a girl could have without taking her clothes off.
And I would say for guys, it's pretty close too.
Yeah, there's a thrill to lying. I don't ever do it.
I don't ever lie either.
It sucks. I wish I did it more.
I do once in a while. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
but
sure.
But I'm fairly honest. And if I do lie, in like a week or two, I'll be like, yeah, actually,
I need
to
reveal something.
But I don't think it's actually out of a... I think it's simpler is one of the reasons I do it.
Same.
But the biggest reason I do it is the times I've been caught lying, I felt like I had the least leverage in whatever conversation I was in, and I felt the most humiliated. So right. It's like
a defense against getting back to that feeling ever.
Yeah.
Because the reward is not worth the shame of those experiences. I think that's probably the same for me.
Yeah, it just sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get a lot. And I also, like, I had a lot of siblings growing up, so my other thing is being accused of something I didn't do is, like, that's one I really don't like.
Why does that get us so mad?
Yeah, maybe it's because it's like, you didn't even get me for the thing I did do.
And the lack of faith.
Yeah, the lack of faith. And the fact that your word can only go so far with a person if they're convinced otherwise, that's, like, almost like maybe a symbol of the human condition, right?
Totally. The worst I ever felt is when I was living such a shitty life, I was telling my mom the truth and she didn't believe me. And I was like, whoa, I've really eroded trust here. Because I was like, no, I'm telling you the truth. She's like, I don't believe you. I was like, man,
a shitty life like in high school or your early 20s?
No, I was in like my late 20s, but I was just partying like crazy and just doing a bunch of stupid shit. And yeah, just like my parents were like, dude, we just do not trust you because you're so out of control. And I was like, whoa, interesting.
And you had been telling them something that wasn't out of control and they didn't even believe
I was telling
it.
Them the truth. I was like, no, I didn't do that thing, this is actually what's been going on. And they were like, no, yeah, we don't believe you. And
wow.
I was like, whoa, okay,
wow.
Yeah,
but you feel like you kind of earned that one a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, it wasn't their fault.
Well, for me, I was a kid and my parents on one of the top bookshelves had The Joy of Sex, and one of my other siblings had taken it down and like looked at it. It's like a 70s illustrated book on sex. My mom found it and just like beeline toward me. It was she thought I was the one who took it down. It wasn't a big deal, but Josh, you can't be looking at this. And I was just to the point of tears because I was like, I didn't do it, you know.
Oh,
I didn't do it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
I didn't do it.
Yeah, and so sex has been joyless ever since.
Good.
No.
Better that way. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, no, it was just a pretty formative feeling. Yeah, and so I think actually for me the fear is like lying will only increase those scenarios.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just easier to keep track of the truth.
Yeah, you're just like, no, I just tell the truth. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I'll just, and not benefit.
I'll omit details. That's probably the worst I'll do.
That's right.
Yeah, I'll give like the... like a feeling of truth, but I've massaged some of the corners of it a little
bit.
That's
just editing.
just making it digestible for
yeah,
the
exactly.
audience.
Yeah, I'm just trying not to waste time with the details
just
that might make
me
look
bad. Just laughing time and characters, yeah. And if I come out looking like a better person as a result, well, that's kind of what you wanted anyway.
Yeah. We're all better for it. Yeah. No one's being harmed in this.
Mm-hmm. Should I go to the next
yeah,
one?
Yeah, I would love to hear it. I love what you've brought so far.
So this one is... this one didn't change how I thought about life at all, but it's just the coolest stuff ever. Like, I think he's my favorite writer to read. I can just pound one of his books in like a day. And they do have more depth than I think he's given credit for, because he has a pretty kind of like cynical outlook on people, but it's very fun. Like, everyone's betraying each other. Everyone's doing crazy stuff, but they're just acting on instinct, and it's exciting. And it's Elmore Leonard's Cuba Libre. And I think this is his best book because it's got a lot of history in it, so you can learn a ton too, but... he's most famous for, like, the books he wrote that got turned into big movies, like Jackie Brown, Get Shorty, Out of Sight, the Justified TV series. Like, all of his books just... And I think his best books actually haven't been turned into movies yet. But, yeah, this one for me is top. And everyone is just so cool.
So cool.
They talk so cool. They're all smooth.
How do some people channel that? He just has to be cool, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him in interviews, and he's, like, doesn't seem like... one of his characters, but yeah, I think he would be a great guy to hang out with.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't say more than's necessary. He's very simple in his approach to writing. He had like 10 rules, and it was like only use a period or a comma for like punctuation. Like, he was like against like semicolons and stuff like that, which
oh,
I
nice.
Thought was cool.
That takes the pressure off.
Yeah, right.
Still don't quite understand semicolons, no matter how many times I look it up.
Dude, exactly. And yeah, and I just like the way...
That's great when you become successful enough at something that you can just cover up your like blind spots by making rules.
Totally.
Like, don't use semicolons. I don't actually know how they work, but don't use them.
Because I don't understand them. They're dumb.
Yeah.
I think Orson Welles said, like, let your limitations be your style. And
yes.
This guy, more style than anybody.
I love that. Yeah, because he's really well known for, like, L.A. noir and, like, Western and...
It's all pulpy.
Did he write L.A. Confidential?
I don't think so. I think that was James Ellroy.
James Ellroy. Okay.
But he's a little not as those ones like have like a broodingness to them, and he's not brooding. Like okay. It's all badass dudes, but they're all very light.
Yeah.
And yeah, I always feel like I'm better at, you know, when you read like a book and it rewires your brain to the author a little bit.
Yeah.
This one, I feel like I talk cooler to people after I read.
No
them.
Kidding.
Like, yeah, like I'm like snappier.
Cuba Libre.
Yeah, good one.
Okay.
Good
one. Well, I got to read it now too because I want some pithy one-liners.
Dude, you'll be, yeah, like you walk in and someone will like steal your cowboy hat and you're like, hey, it's a 10-gallon hat on a 20-gallon head. this guy's
fucking. That reminds me of a book I read last night that made me cry. This book, Erosion by Terry Tempest Williams. I came across this line of hers. Her brother is in his 50s. He commits suicide. She writes this incredibly touching piece where she goes to, her and her brother, they witness his cremation, which is like so intense. But then she says, and we'll get to the part that relates to the 10-gallon hat in the most non-cool way, but she says, Dan's ashes weighed 8 pounds, 7 ounces, the same weight as when he was born.
Whoa.
Fuck. And then the line after that is, it is also the weight of a gallon of water one carries in the desert. Yeah, so like for 3 to 5 seconds, I just lost it. I just started crying, and then it stopped.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, but the 10-gallon hat reminded me of it. And yeah, so beautiful.
Our beginning, our end, our salvation, all there in like a couple sentences.
Couple sentences. And you know, there's parts in here where I'm like, oh, would I even like this woman if I met her in real life? She's like a hardcore environmentalist. But you know, she's basically talking about how personal and environmental grief are one and the same. Who we are and our environment and how we treat it is how we treat ourselves, and what we lose is inherent in, you know, life, but also as we sort of pervert life and nature and stuff, it sort of skews how we've handled grief. And so, yeah, anyway, I just feel like I found this book at exactly the right time.
How'd you find it?
So that's the crazy part. I've been touring. I'm trying to visit all 73 of the LA Public Library locations.
I saw this.
Yeah, and make videos about it. And I think my fourth or fifth, I went to the Westwood Library branch, and they have a $1 used book sale cart. Came across it, read a few lines. But leading up to it, I'd had this weird thing at the beginning and end of this year, 2023 into 2024, where I kept hearing owls. Like I'd see them in trees in my neighborhood. Two of them showed up like a block away. They were living in the palm trees. Went up to Santa Cruz for Christmas, and I saw an owl on a telephone line, and it flew off right after I got off the phone with my sister. My dad used to always collect owls. Then I bought my girlfriend this book on symbols, and I've talked about this, I think, on the podcast already, but it's she looked up owls, and it was like they mean like death and rebirth to most cultures. And then like the Inuits are like, owls are kind of like spirit guides. And I was like, okay, let's go with theirs. Death and rebirth sounds a little heavy. But then, you know, I flip open this woman's book, and like the first chapter, it's something like, it's called like the question held by owls. And I'm like, yeah, I really feel like this book found me.
Interesting.
Yeah, really interesting.
So owls just are like that's like the motif of your life?
At least it was December, January. I feel like I'm coming out of the owl phase. I'm glad to be. But it's also cool when you can sort of, even in this sort of modern life, kind of understand that, like, yeah, nature's still speaking to you.
Yeah, that the natural part's always right there if you pay attention.
Right there, even in a...
Even if we obstruct it, it's still there.
That's right. Well, and she was saying how, like, rock faces, they measured from the bottom of this rock face to the top, and they emit noise on, like, a certain frequency. And that, like, when helicopters fly over these surfaces, there's a noise that humans can't even hear that, like, actually disturbs the environment. And so just that there's all these interactions that are happening that we don't even pick up on a sensory level.
But does nature care, or is it our, like... Does it bother us because we feel like it would bother nature?
Right. We're like ego identifying. Yeah, I think there's a lot of that.
Yeah, because like no matter how bad we fuck it up, like I feel like it's still gonna be okay, but we're gonna be the ones who like can't hang anymore. And
yeah.
Then, like a lot of other critters.
It seems like it has a response, right? And it's like, this is just what, okay, nature will respond.
That's why I like malls, because malls will go away one day. But like, I know the mountains will always be there.
Yeah, so malls are more precious in a way.
Totally. Like when I go to the Grove, I'm like, this is...
Soak this in.
Yeah, soak this in, because this will not... This will not last much longer.
Things like the Grove are fascinating because they simulate what walking through a city without cars would be. And then, but they like, they're, I don't know if you've read about it, like they'll study what's the ideal curb height for a pedestrian. Let's put in a curb and they'll find it.
I didn't know that, but I could feel it when
you
I'm
can
there,
feel it.
Because it's so perfectly,
it's so
like,
ideal.
It's perfect.
Yeah. No, I love being at the Grove and the Americana, and I would hang out at the one
in
Westlake.
Caruso Head.
Yeah, Caruso Head. Yeah, the Commons in Calabasas, the Westlake Promenade was near my high school. I would ditch school and go to the Barnes & Noble there.
The Barnes & Noble's three stories. They got good areas to sit.
I've said it. When you like grow up in the suburbs, that feels like you're in Paris.
Totally. I used to steal books.
Me too.
Just for the rush.
Yeah, and from Barnes & Noble.
And you don't even have to, because they got like a 2-week return policy as long as it's unread.
Okay. So you're just making a library out of Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
All theoretical, of course. This is for entertainment. We're not saying we did it.
Mm-hmm. And then, all right, should I get to my last one?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So it's not this one, but I do like this book a lot because it's just about being selfish.
Great.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Once again, just kind of leaning into it.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of comes back on the dude in the end. Like, there is some karma for it.
There's a moral.
But I think I read it when I was about the protagonist's age, and I was like, oh, yeah. There's something about when life is really easy for you and everything's working out for you that you just don't care much what happens to other people because you feel like it's supposed to work out that way almost.
Yeah, yeah. The ability to like feel empathy, that's like a learned, that's, you're born with it, but there's also some experiences that definitely fast forward the learning on it.
Yeah, and like whatever track you're on in life can kind of accelerated to or decelerate, but I don't have his stuff here, and maybe I'm sure he's going to get brought up a lot if it's people of a certain age, but I was going to go with David Foster Wallace.
I want to talk about David Foster Wallace. We haven't talked about him at all on this. I want to say one more thing to your subject. Yeah. on Joe College is like, in reading selfish books when you're young, I didn't like understand politics or propaganda in my 20s. I still don't, but you know, I at least have an awareness. And so I just would always see Ayn Rand books everywhere, like Atlas Shrugged. It looked really big. And I was like, oh, I bet you have to read this because it's really big. And The Fountainhead. And so I just like read both of those books with like no idea that there was like a political bent to them.
Right.
But they were kind of encouraging you to be selfish just on surface level. I didn't understand that she was saying, hey, societally, we should all be libertarians or whatever it is. But I just thought there was something really funny about like reading these books and not piecing together the propaganda in any way. I was like, oh, that was a story.
Have you seen the Adam Curtis documentary that kind of has a chunk about her?
No.
Well, she was like having an affair with someone who was like in her like little thinker salon. And she kept telling the dude, she's like, he was married. She's like, you got to leave your wife because that is what the objectivist philosophy wants you to do. Oh, and so she had totally taken all of her like theories and just like 100% makeshifted them to this dude and was like, bro, you gotta be with me.
Are we really all just like seeing how far our cult can go in the world? Mm-hmm. And like it either gets rejected or we get to take our cult a little further.
Yeah. And that's like, a good way of describing life.
You know, she's like, let's see if this objective philosophy thing plays in my own love life.
And when you have kids, that's what you're doing. You're like, are these kids going to buy into what I'm selling?
Right. Yeah. Do you have kids?
I just had two, yeah. They're 6 months old.
No way.
Twins?
Twins? Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, you're on that train of thought.
Yeah, because I've taken in so much of what my parents taught me, and I've rejected a lot of it, but I'm totally stamped by them. But, yeah. I look at my kids sometimes, I'm like, oh, you're going to like really reject half of what I tell you and like hate me at certain points. And that's just how it goes.
And you might be right for some of
it. You'd be totally right. And there'll be blind spots that I'm ignorant to that I walk around thinking above. And then you're going to point them out to me and throw it in my face.
Yeah. Well, and then that's just it, right? And then how you take in that information from them is kind of the...
I guess that's a big moment for me. Yeah. Am I going to be like, shut up? You know? Or am I going to be like, And probably both.
Both. You'd be like, shut up. Okay, wait.
Because yeah. They probably do deserve a little... I certainly deserve some shut up.
Yeah, we all do. I mean, that... But someone, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a perfect segue to David Foster Wallace because there's a lot of revisionist history on him. A lot of people who kind of write him off now as like a certain caricature of intellectual bro who was just as toxic as everyone else, whatever. I read Infinite Jest when I was in my mid-20s, right at the time when all the dudes were reading it. I read a few of his other books. Of course, at the time, I really loved them. And I found him so funny.
And the cool is kind of funny, like smart and dumb at the same time, and just walking in lockstep and surprising you.
Yes. There was his book, The Broom of the System, I remember reading. I'm just reading along, and then you're a third of the way in, and he's talking about a character seeing the sweeping black sands of the Ohio desert. And I just burst into laughter because he just created this magical, realist, absurd moment where there's a big black sand desert in Ohio. And it just came, it just hit me out of the
blue. Timing.
Timing. And I just was cracking up out loud.
It is. It's crazy because, yeah, I think he had a profound influence on the way I wanted to think, where I was oh, it'd be cool to have a brain like his. And I was when I'd read him, I just felt like I was learning or laughing on every page. But then totally, I read the biography of him, which people think went too soft on him now. I think the biography is pretty rough on him.
Every love story is a ghost story.
Yeah, the DT Max one. And after I read it, I was like, no, this dude's a psycho. It definitely shook up the kind of kindness that he would project in interviews and stuff. And now, he's kind of a punch, which happens to, I guess, all the people who get to that level of success. You know, at a certain point, people just associate you with your annoying followers or whatever, your worst crimes. But
their worst crimes. Their lives end up getting moralized. So they're okay, now we need to apply today's morality to when they were alive, or even their morality to when they were alive, and it feels diminish them a bit or something.
And the books are, I haven't reread them in a while, but they were at that point I was there's no one I like more than this guy. And he kind of, same time, because when you're in your 20s, you are trying to learn how to live. I was no, he's teaching me how to approach the world.
So which book of his in particular?
Probably the nonfiction ones. Consider the Lobster, or Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again.
Yeah.
I did The Girl with the Curious Hair. There was little passages in there, but I kind of did prefer him describing real life.
Well, and he had that famous talk about the fish and
the
water.
Yeah, this is water.
This is water, and the other fish going, what's that? You're right. He did sort of speak to a certain okay, life is shitty, but here's how you sort of try to dig your way through. Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again, the title story about his time on the cruise ship.
Amazing.
Yeah, and just all the things he was speaking to, okay, take it or leave it. This could mark me as a bro-lit guy. But Infinite Jest was initially titled Infinite Jest, A Failed Entertainment. He was writing it in a style to bludgeon you with anti-entertainment. And the core of the story is there's a tape that you get in the mail that is so satisfying to you when you watch it, you're rendered comatose and in a diaper. And it's man, how far are we from that with these Apple goggles? And Netflix started sending you DVDs in the mail, and now you don't even need to go to your mailbox. It's all here. And
yeah, he was right.
He was right. And I'm sure other people were thinking it at the time.
And other people were probably right too, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not to say
he's not the only one.
This sole visionary.
No, but he did a good job of packaging it and making it fun and entertaining and soulful.
Yeah.
It was funny, not funny actually, but coincidental, because you talked about the suicide in there. And one of the favorite things, because he had that really nasty relationship with Mary Carr, where I think he pulled a gun on her, and she was he was showing up at her house and being a lunatic. And her poem that she wrote about him after he died is my favorite poem ever, because it's so, she looks so sideways at his pain. She just sees it as ego and pretension almost. And she says forgive me for thinking every suicide's an asshole.
Wow.
And she kind of just even.
And I mean, she was there, so she's totally valid in her feelings.
And she's a really good writer. So,
yeah, she is.
So it's it hits, she kind of she's looking down on him a little bit while I was looking up to him. So I like reading that too, and just seeing, and it kind of convinced me in a way. I was like, yeah, he was kind of not a great dude, but the books mean a lot to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and I'm trying, I think we're all grappling, as we know so much about every person now, grappling with how to take in conflicting art in that way.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting conversation, and one I think that's ongoing. And yeah, also the other thing is revisiting. Like, I remember those Gen X authors when I was in my early 20s. They were so hard to find at used bookstores. And now every book sale, there's a David Foster Wallace, Girl with the Curious Hair copy, all the Juno Diaz books, because I loved him at the time, too. Sure. And then I flipped one open the other day in the library book sale, and I was like, oh, no. Okay,
his books did rip, though.
They, when you were 22 and thought, like, that's the way the world was and looked, and that romance was just sort of walking the thin line between being an asshole and, like, a charismatic dude or whatever. And
maybe I'm more forgiving of Foster Wallace because he's dead. Yeah. If Juno Diaz died, I'd probably read Drown Again or something, or Brief Wondrous, and be like, oh, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, I know, and then that adds the layer there, too. I mean, hearing you talk about Mary Carr's poem makes you think even further on it, but it's like, yeah, I'm being generous. Yeah,
I guess the other one who has kind of seems like he was a decent dude as far as we know is George Saunders. Yeah, he's another big one from that kind of group that I'm like, he kind of, when I read his stuff, I was just like, I couldn't even get through the whole thing because I'd get so sad. But
yeah, he's one of my favorites, and he seems by all accounts as generous of a person as he probably is.
He seems cool.
We'll
see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Give it time. But man, yeah, I had a feeling I'd enjoy this conversation, and I enjoyed it even more.
Oh, good. Me too, man. I was so excited to come in and talk about this stuff. It's fun.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, and yeah, I feel better for it. So, JT Parr.
Oh, thanks, man. Josh, thanks a lot. Turek. Pleasure. Honor.
Yeah, pleasure.